Thank you. Our next speaker is Juan Javier Del Granada from the Institute Tecnológico Autónomo de México from Mexico City, who is an important scholar dealing with law and economics.
Thank you so much. First of all, I want to thank Alex Chapuin for this invitation to speak to you. It's quite an opportunity. I also want to thank Bill Campbell for the focus in Latin America and this year's Philadelphia meeting. I have to say something. Even though I'm teaching right now, I was a law teacher in the United States for many years, so I got an offer to move to Mexico, which I couldn't resist. Everything that is wrong with law and government in Latin America originated in Mexico, so I just had to go there, and it's been very interesting to be in Mexico, first of all. Second of all, I want to tell you, and I remember I'm Bolivian, so after law school in the U.S., I actually moved back to my country. My wife is from Santa Cruz, and so I have a very homesick wife right now. But I want to tell you what kind of a madman Mr. Chavez is. One of the Mexican professors that I have befriended in Mexico City is Alejandro Mayagoitia, who teaches at the Universidad Panamericana, a Catholic school in Mexico City, and I'm afraid that he's a bit of a snob, and he belongs to the Mexican Genealogical Society. So, what does he tell me? Apparently, Mr. Chavez, through the Venezuelan Diplomatic Service, has notified the Mexican Diplomatic Service, and they forwarded the request to the Mexican Genealogical Society. Mr. Chavez wants to have himself declared a descendant of Montezuma. This is true. And in fact, if you would be interested, I'm sure Professor Alejandro Mayagoitia has all of the documentation too, just so you know what kind of situation people in my country are dealing with. My wife broke down in tears about 2 weeks ago because she went on YouTube and downloaded some images of Venezuelan troops coming into Santa Cruz. And so I come home and she's crying and she tells me they're gonna kill people in my hometown. So this is the kind of situation that we're facing right now. I'm very happy to talk after Professor Darío Fernández because I'm gonna tell you that, yes, in the Spanish American tradition, we do have a culture of liberty, and I'm gonna tell you that our culture consists in two fundamental pillars, rests on two pillars. One is literature, and the other is, believe it or not, law. So I'm very happy to speak after a literature professor, and I'm a law professor, and I hope to also give you a little bit of vision of why not just literature, but also law is one of the traditions of liberty that we have in Spanish America. I'm glad that he referred to the debate between Sepúlveda and Las Casas. Sepúlveda was actually a very good legal scholar. Las Casas was not, but he used legal arguments in that debate. And just think, why would he feel compelled, even though he wasn't a legal scholar, to use legal debates? Because the culture in Spanish America was very legalistic. And I will tell you why that is so important to liberty. Let us not forget that when the conquistadors came into contact with American Indians for the first time, it was a bizarre situation. That's right, they did not have armor. Actually, what they had is a legal document, something called the requerimiento. So they would be marching through the Amazon jungle, and before they did anything, they would read a legal document to the Native Americans, explaining the legal rights that they had to be there and asking them to please submit instead of So, I mean, we're dealing with a very legalistic culture. The only culture that maybe approximates Spanish America in the 16th century is Anglo-America in the 19th and 20th centuries. You have a very legalistic society. And I'll tell you why law is so important for liberty, how we build liberty with law. Of course, you have Professor Leggio has already mentioned the scholastics. And of course, you have heard of Las Casas, Sepúlveda, no doubt you have heard of Vitoria, you have also heard of Suarez. I'm going to talk to you about some people you haven't heard about. For example, in our culture of liberty, of course, we come from the Catholic side of the Catholic-Protestant divide. And it's very nice that now, through our newfound ecumenical spirit, we are bridging that divide and finding that we really are not that very different as Christians. But in my tradition, our tradition of liberty, of course, is in canon law. And in canon law, a very important tradition of liberty, of course, is conciliarist thought. So I'm going to talk to you about two figures very quickly. One is from the 15th century, and he took part in the Council of Basel. The other is from the 16th century, and he takes part in the Council of Trent. The Council of Trent, of course, is part of the Counter-Reformation. Okay, the first guy, Juan de Segovia. There's a debate in the Roman law tradition about the lex regia, which is a law through which the Roman people give power to the king. And for example, Juan de Segovia argues that the people never advocate the totality of their rights because these rights are inalienable. For example, he says, Nunquam sibi abdicat propteria, quod inseparabilis est ab ea. Let's jump to the 16th century. Fernando Vázquez de Menchaca, very important scholastic writer, writes a treatise on property law. I will talk about why property law is so important for liberty. This is fundamental. Hugo Grotius took most of his arguments from Fernando Vázquez de Menchaca. He's a Baroque scholastic. Not only is it late scholasticism part of his tradition, but also let us not forget the flowering of humanism in the 16th and 17th centuries in Spanish America was tremendous. This is the golden age of Spanish literature. Our culture has both literature and law. And so let me tell you how Vázquez de Menchaca defines property. He defines property as liberty. Est enim naturalis facultas e eus, quod facere libet. So that it is, property creates a space where you can do as you please. Liberty is built on law. Law is what makes liberty possible. Social organization is either, if we think about it for a moment, either based on hierarchy or on property. Let us not forget that when just 2 years after the Bolsheviks eliminated property, Lenin had to ask the Soviet people to please start working for the Soviet cause. Property law contracts, private property. Private property is what allows us to act in our own interest. Law is also what allows us to act in the interest of others. If you remove property, people will stop acting in their own interest. This is what we need in Latin America. We need to help ourselves, and we will not be able to help ourselves as long as we do not have a vigorous system of private law. What has happened in Latin America is that our legal systems were socialized at the beginning of the 20th century. We privatized our economies in the 1990s and completely forgot that our legal systems had been socialized and constitutionalized. It is so important for us to recover this tradition of law in order for us to recover a tradition of liberty that we have. Let us not forget the resistance to Roman law in medieval Europe. This is very important to recall. Roman law was seen as uncommunal, because if the alternative to property is hierarchy, that's what happened in socialism. You remove property, socialism returns to feudalism. Mr. Chavez misuses the image of Bolivar. Bolivar at least was an enlightened military man, but let me tell you what happened in Latin America. We had this tradition of literature and law. We lost the tradition of law. Bolivar wanted to unite all of Latin America, but he was so blind to constitutionalism. If you read his constitution, it's bizarre. He wants to be a life president, and he thinks of the presidency as the sun, with everything else revolving around the president. And this guy, who was completely blind to any notion of constitutionalism, wanted to unite Latin America. Of course he failed. But let's not forget that Latin America was united, and that the Pax Hispana lasted for almost four centuries, and that the confederalism that existed in the Spanish Indies is maybe a precedent to US constitutionalism and federalism. This is something that has to be explored by historians. Let us not forget that the way that liberty was recovered in the English colonies, remember Virginia was the most important of the English colonies, was because in Virginia, the parliament and the judges had no power. The governor was all powerful in Virginia. So what happened with the Constitution in Virginia, which of course is what leads to the U.S. Constitution, is basically a reaction against that situation. In Spanish America, you had rule by courts. My country, Bolivia, and some other Latin American countries have been established on the jurisdictions of courts of law. So Bolivia, to cite a few other examples, Ecuador, Guatemala, were established and basically under jurisdictions of Spanish courts of law. In the Spanish system, we had judicial. Disaster for our region. At the end of the 18th century, we have a tremendous amount of economic growth. Regions such, peripheral areas such as Argentina and Colombia, are growing at an incredible rate at the end of the 18th century. But of course there's a collapse of the system because France invades Spain. And we, in the 19th century, basically go back to barbarism. We lose our legal system, we lose law. Law is how you build liberty. Latin America has been important in the cause of liberty. Let us not forget that the Reaganite revolution and Thatcherism started in Chile. And Chile is a beacon of hope for Latin America right now. My father was a professor at the University of Chicago. I grew up in Hyde Park on the south side of Chicago. But after school, I went back to my country. I went back to Bolivia. The only country that's doing really well right now in Latin America, the only country that has institutions, that has legal institutions, that has law, is Chile. One of my best friends at the law school in Mexico right now is the only private law scholar there. He's Chilean. Everyone in Mexico is a constitutionalist. Constitutional law has eaten the entire legal system. Everything is a constitutional debate. You know, social rights, social fundamental rights, trying to build an economy from the outside, trying to build an economy through public law, doesn't work. What we need is a vigorous private sector. But it's not just a question of privatizing. In order for the private sector to work, we need to refill the void We need to reprivatize private law in Latin America. I'm part of a movement that is trying to do that. I'm part of the law and economics movement in Latin America. And in the same way that economic liberal thinking took root in Chile in the 1970s, we are hoping that law and economics will take root in Latin America, because it's not going to take root in Europe. Europe, despite their Bologna plan, their universities are in real trouble. There are very serious problems. The very underdevelopment that we have in Latin America means that we're a little more open to North American ideas. Plus, we're very, very close to the United States. We share the American experience. It is a tragedy in our region of the world that most law professors are educated in Europe and not in the US. People who go to the US usually take LLMs, they become practicing lawyers. I'm really in a minority, but what has changed is I used to be by myself in Bolivia, but there are a few of us in all of Latin America's countries. We really care about the region. We understand that a scholarly community is important for development, and we are willing to try and provide some alternative proposals for the region. It's very hard for American universities to come and contribute. We need local scholars working in a local milieu, being creative and taking knowledge and adapting it to local circumstances, and we need these scholars connected among themselves. We need to recover law in our Latin American tradition if we're going to recover liberty. Thank you.